I'm happy to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Greg Palast. He's an investigative journalist. He reports for the BBC and The Guardian, among others. He's author of the New York Times bestsellers The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, Vulture's Picnic, and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Glad to be with you again.
So this week marked the 25th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And you are reporting that BP was behind the disaster, not just Exxon. What was BP's role?
Yeah, Exxon takes the blame, and believe me, I won't let them off the hook, because they were dumb enough to have their name on the ship, the Exxon Valdez. By the way, they got smart. They've renamed it the Sea River Mediterranean, like it's a Club Med cruise ship. But the real culprit, the even more responsibility than Exxon, is British Petroleum. I know this because I was the chief investigator for the people that actually own that property of the Prince William Sound, that is, the natives, the Chugach natives who live there, and it's their property that was slimed 1,000 miles of coastline by Exxon's oil. And before I was an investigative reporter, for those who know Greg Palast, I was actually an investigator, and so I spent 3 years digging into the real causes of the Exxon Valdez disaster. And the main thing is that, yes, Exxon's captain ran the ship up on Bligh Reef, but it's not a story of drunken skipper hits reef. You know, the Exxon loves that because that doesn't make it corporate fraud. That makes it human frailty, you know, this poor drunk, you know. But he wasn't at the wheel to begin with. The third mate was at the wheel. The problem was is that Exxon had turned off its radar, had turned off the radar, the Raycast radar system, because it was too expensive to maintain and train. So the third mate was like, you know, operating like Christopher Columbus, just looking out the window, dead reckoning, they call it. And, you know, it smacked up the ship. However, just because you ground a tanker does not mean that you have to slime 1,000 miles of coastline. You know, we just had a tanker barge break up in Galveston, and it has not slimed 1,000 miles of coastline. The reason is that in Galveston, they immediately put out, there's a really easy way to take care of oil spills. You put on a rubber and you suck. The way it's done, if you look at those pictures in Galveston, 69,000 feet of rubber skirting called boom is the big rubber skirt you put around several circles of rubber skirt around a spill, around a stricken ship. And then you bring in these ships called skimmers, which suck out the oil, or you can burn it off or otherwise get rid of it. In the case of the Exxon Valdez, there were no rubber skirts. There were no skimmer ships. Why? The answer is that BP had promised that there would be, you know, the rubber skirts and the equipment and the teams, and they faked it. Every bit of it was a lie. They had it all out on paper. They said, who's going to look? And here's the horrible, the ugly irony of what BP did. The ship hit at Bligh Reef. Bligh Island, right there, it hit right exactly where the equipment was going to be based. That is, it was as if someone starts a fire in front of a fire station. It should be nothing to put it out. It should be nothing to contain that ship. In fact, it shouldn't have even hit, because BP was supposed to have a pilot station there, and the pilots would have said, hey, you're heading right into the pilot house, buddy. But there was no pilot station. The skimmer boats that were supposed to be right there, right exactly where the ship hit, that containment ship was in fact not there, even though BP promised they would never run a tanker unless that containment ship were ready. It was in dry dock, its equipment locked under ice in a warehouse. And the saddest part is that you can't have a fire truck without firemen, so the guys who are supposed to operate the emergency equipment are the Chugach natives of the Sound, who were trained, equipped. They had the Mustang suits where you can drop into Arctic water to go after these, lay out the boom and go after the spills. Those natives had been hired so that BP could get authority to run ships. But once they got the authority, they fired the natives. They had them trained. They took away their equipment. They took away their emergency stuff. And the natives stood there on the beach at the Titlick Island, at the Titlick Village, the guys who are supposed to be running the emergency stuff, they stood there helpless watching that ship head into the reef.
even while they were trained to face that exactly that kind of an emergency.
But they'd been, one, they'd been fired, so they had no legal authority, but even so, they would have gone out. But they took away their equipment. They took away their boats. They took away the rubber boom. They literally said, one Exxon executive said, they were afraid to leave equipment there because the natives would steal it. And as one native woman I knew said, what are we going to do with a bunch of hunks, 20 miles of rubber hose? And so they literally took they had some equipment out and they took it away. And so the ship hit right exactly where the equipment and the crews were supposed to be. If BP hadn't lied again, you would have never heard about the Exxon Valdez. You wouldn't remember. Just like this little spill in Galveston, there's a picture in the paper for one day in page 12, and it disappears. Because in Galveston, they had 69,000 feet of boom and 29 skimmer ships there on the spot immediately. That's what the law says you have to do. But in Alaska, BP said, hey, who's going to notice? Just a bunch of natives.
So we have a situation where oil companies, including BP, are among the most profitable corporations in the world, and yet it's too expensive to operate radar or to keep safety equipment?
Yeah. Well, first of all, a million here, a million there adds up. And these guys know it's cheaper as far as they're concerned. Look, Exxon paid, in the end, a $500 million fine. They waited 22 years to pay it. The Supreme Court knocked down 90% of the court judgment. So a $500 million is peanuts compared to running an entire oil spill response operation. Now they've got some response operation up in Alaska because they're really being watched, and that costs about a $500 million a year. They got away for 16 years without any spill response operation, so they saved $8 billion before the Exxon and Valdez hit, so it was a bargain. It's a permit to pollute. And BP, by the way, totally got away with murder because, as I said, in my investigations, BP was far more responsible. British Petroleum was far more responsible than Exxon for the disaster in Alaska. And look, my clients, I worked with the Chugach natives. They were my clients. And they were desperate. They're in the middle of the Prince William Sound. They didn't have food because their food was now poisoned. They don't have a supermarket there. There's no Whole Foods on Chinika Island. They lived off of what they could catch. They're seal hunters and fishermen. They didn't have food. They didn't have work. They did some commercial fishing. That was gone. Everything was destroyed. Their fishing boats were being repossessed. People were committing suicide. It was horrible. And so the natives said, okay, so BP said, look, don't breathe a word about fraud charges, and we'll just pay you. We have an insurance fund of $125 million. We'll give you the insurance fund. And that was for the natives, the government, the towns, the fishermen all over Alaska got a few bucks each from this BP insurance fund. BP itself paid zero, zero nothing. And therefore, in the Gulf, you had the same thing because BP got away with it in Alaska. They did it again in the Gulf. If you go back to the photos of the Deepwater Horizon, you won't see that rubber skirt around the rig, which should have been out there. They should have had several concentric circles of rubber rig. They were supposed to. There were no skimmer ships. What you see is you see these dramatic pictures of these. Somehow they got boats out there with fire hoses. But spraying an oil fire with water is ludicrous and dangerous and stupid. But the equipment that was supposed to be there wasn't there. And so you end up with 600 miles of Gulf Coast shoreline completely slimed because BP got away with it in Alaska. They did the same thing in the Gulf. There was no reason, even when the Deepwater Horizon went down, why they couldn't have captured most of that oil right there.
So there are laws and there are regulations around safety, and the United States has actually a fairly good safety culture in many ways, and we have good emergency response and things like that. Why are these things not enforced for certain groups like oil companies?
Bribery, sex, political power, bullying, beatings. Let me break that down. And again, I was an investigator on this. In the case of the Deepwater Horizon, for example, you have the Minerals and Mining Service supposed to watch it. MMS was, there was massive bribery by BP throughout the MMS. It was cheap bribery, things like Super Bowl tickets and stuff. And when I say sex, I was investigating BP in the Caspian Sea, and for the officials of the government of the Caspian, they used to fly officials to London to spend the weekend with lap dancers. But in the case of the Minerals Mining Service in the U.S., BP executives took care of the personal functions themselves. You had BP officials literally in bed with the regulators, and that's not metaphorically. They were in bed with them. So that's the MMS in the Gulf. We did have an honest inspector in charge up in Alaska before the Exxon Valdez went aground, a guy named Dan Long. If you read my book, Vulture's Picnic, you'll get the story of Inspector Lawn, who kept writing memos and complaining that he says, I think at these, that after they fired the natives, BP just made up, put names on a list that were just completely fake. It's emergency crews who were basically like Pirates of the Caribbean. It was all ghost crews and ghost ships. And he said, I think this is all a phony. And so BP used its power with the state to have Inspector Lawn fired. To get an idea of this, Bob Malone, who was head of BP USA, was also co-chair of the George Bush election campaign. I mean, these guys have the swing and the power. British or not, they are a tremendous political power in the United States. In fact, and a lot of it derives from the fact that their principal owner is J.P. Morgan. So the inspector was fired. The oil is still there because I just was up in the Prince William Sound and flew up there with cameraman Rick Rowley. You could see our film Vultures and Vote Rustlers at gregpalace.com, and I advise people to do that. It's put out by my foundation. You can see, I stick my hand in the oil. The Exxon Valdez oil from 2 decades ago, it's still there. I don't care what they say about nature's washed it away. It's still there. Nature's not a toilet that you can just, you know, flush and it's gone. That's not how it works. And, by the way, I knew it was Exxon oil because I took with me expert biologists who test the chemical tag of the oil. It's still there on the beach of the Prince William Sound. Same as in the Gulf. They tell you the Gulf is clean now. And I went there with biologist Rick Steiner from the University of Alaska. He said, the oil's all over the place. This oil's going to be here another 40 years. By the way, and you talk about regulation, Rick Steiner, the chairman of the biology department at the University of Alaska, was fired. That is, they shut down his department because he's a tenured professor and a department chairman. They couldn't fire him. They simply defunded his entire department, so he lost his job because he's saying the oil's still out there in Alaska, the oil's still on the beaches in the Gulf. So, yeah, we have Americans don't like to put up with this stuff. I agree. Americans, if they knew about it, wouldn't put up with it, but we're not told about it. You're not going to see it on the, by the way, the petroleum broadcast system. PBS, the PBS NewsHour's principal sponsor is Chevron Corporation. In fact, they used to have the Chevron logo right next to the PBS logo on their website until I asked them about it, and suddenly, why is that there? And then suddenly the logo, Chevron logo, disappeared. So when you watch PBS, it's the petroleum broadcast system. They have never and will never tell you this story.
We're talking to Greg Palast, 25 years after the Exxon Valdez spill. What happened to the Chugach Native people who were, at that point, victims of the oil spill? What have their lives been like over the last 25 years?
Well, two things have happened. Obviously, the immediate thing was the tragedy. And by the way, I should mention that this week is also the 50th anniversary of the Great Alaska Earthquake. It was on the 25th anniversary of the Alaska Earthquake. The Chugach Natives had their villages destroyed by that earthquake because, for example, the island Chiniga, there were warnings that went out to Malibu, California, to stay off the beaches, but no one radioed to the Chugach villages that big tsunami was coming. A 90-foot wall of water hit Chiniga, drowned a third of the residents. They rebuilt, and on the 25th anniversary of their rebuilding, they got hit with the oil. So I got to tell you that every fishing boat, for example, at Nanwalek Island was repossessed by banks because you can't fish. It's illegal to catch and sell fish that have been contaminated. They went bankrupt. Massive suicides, including the mayor of Cordova, the city in the Sound, who left a note saying, you know, this is what Exxon and BP did, and I can't take it anymore. And he committed suicide. That was all over the place. You had, you know, alcoholism, people losing everything. And then it also went crazy because a few people made a ton of money on oil spill cleanup contracts. the place went berserk. But I have to say now, people have, you know, they waited 22 years to get paid by Exxon. A third of my clients died between the spill and the payment. But those who have remained, the Chugach natives, very much have, they don't rely on anyone anymore. I mean, they're not very trusting people, and I don't blame them. So they have built their own businesses, which they run by internet from the Prince William Sound. They're very, very successful operations. But, you know, they've lost a lot of their original life, which was, you know, now they fly in their food because they couldn't catch it. It's, you know, it's still contaminated.
I can't help but think when I listen to this story that this is what the actual outcome looks like when companies promise jobs. You know, they say, well, we're going to drill or we're going to ship oil, whatever, but there will be jobs for you. And in this case, what they do is they give you the jobs for 45 minutes and then they take them away and the consequences are before you. What will that look like with, for example, the Keystone XL pipeline or...
Yeah, well, you know, the Keystone is a typical example. You don't need many people to build a pipeline, just bolt the stuff together, right? And the steel and pipe comes from Japan and China, and you just have a few hundred guys at a time who are bolting pipe together. And then the system is going to be run completely robotically. They use something called pipe inspection gates. These are basically robots. They don't even have inspectors anymore. These systems, the for example, the pumping stations of the Trans-Alaska pipeline are completely automated. There's no human being there. They promised all these jobs to work on the pipeline, but there's no one there. They promised inspection jobs, pumping station jobs. The pumping stations are run by robots. And by the way, sometimes they blow up because no one's there. The inspections are done by robots, which, if you read Vulture's Picnic, this is Greg Powell talking, if you get that book of mine, I talk about how the robots are fixed not to complain when there's something wrong with the pipe, so they got to replace it. As soon as one of these robots says, hey, this pipe is corroded, they have to replace it. So they basically use software, they fix the software, so the pipelines, the robots are happy until something explodes. So, you know, you don't get the jobs. And the only jobs you get are the jobs cleaning up the spills. Like when I was down in the Gulf, and you see this, again, go to gregpowles.com, you'll see this, my new film, Vultures of Vote Wrestlers. I go out and speak to the black people. Looks like prison chain gangs, I kid you not. These chain gangs cleaning up the oil off the beaches in the Gulf. Those guys are there. They get $14 an hour to be picking up hydrocarbons. They're not wearing any safety clothes. They gave them some baggies to put over their feet, and they're picking up the oil with kitty litter pooper scoopers. I'm not making this up. Kitty litter pooper scoopers. They pick up the oil. They have no respirators, nothing. They get no benefits. They don't even get health inspections, which at least when the natives were do oil cleanups, they wear hazmat suits. They get health inspections. These guys are just, they get nothing. These are people who lost their jobs because of the spills, the casinos and fishing shacks and fishing businesses all closed up and down the Gulf along the water. They're not coming back. So you go from having a business to picking up gunk with your hands or with pooper scoopers. That's the jobs you're going to get, guys, picking up the spilled gunk.
Leaving aside the hope that in the world that most of us would want to see, there would be very little oil drilling because we'd actually be dealing with climate change and promoting energy alternatives and so on. But in this existing world in which we actually live, what do you think would be the best way to keep oil drilling and transportation as safe as it could possibly be?
Well, I would say two things right off, three things. Number one, we can massively cut what we need. In other words, like the XL pipeline is a living horror show. Why are we opening up? Why are we taking oil from Canada down to Texas? I mean, think about it. Why are we taking oil to Texas? I mean, it's coal to Newcastle. The answer is that the Koch brothers have a refinery at the end of the pipeline in Corpus Christi, Texas. That's what that crude oil from the tar sands, not even oil, it's liquid coal, bituminous, as they call it. And that's so that the Koch brothers don't have to buy the oil for that refinery from Venezuela, which charges them a full price and then some. The $30 barrel savings is to get the oil from Canada. That's why we're doing it. So what we're doing is we're opening up the filthiest stuff in the world. So we can cut that back, absolutely. So that's number one. Number two, We need governments which aren't corrupted, and that includes ours. I mean, just this week, Obama's Department of Interior authorized BP to drill a new tract in the Gulf right next to where the BP Deepwater Horizon went down. That stuff's got to end. If you dump a bunch of oil inside an apartment that you're renting, you don't get a new lease. They throw you out. They charge you for it and throw you out. Here Obama's saying, proudly saying, oh, we're happy to welcome BP back. I'm not happy to welcome BP back. They lied. In fact, one of their, how they could even allow them back, because the vice president in charge of Gulf drilling, David Rainey, is right now under federal criminal indictment for felonious obstruction of justice, felonious obstruction of Congress. He lied to Congress. When do we start saying lies count? So we need to, one, stop making ourselves vassals to the oil lords by cutting them out of oil. Two, we need more public ownership and control of the oil system. And three, very important, is that we have to start making a corporate crime punishable, which it doesn't seem to be. I mean, in the case of the Exxon Valdez, not only did Exxon wait 22 years, but the price was cut by the Supreme Court by 90%, and BP didn't pay a penny. You know, people say, oh, well, now they're paying in the Gulf. You know what? It's a permit to pollute. They got away with murder for decades. They had one expensive, they're shocked that they ended up paying. And they're doing nothing but running full-page ads, bitching that they're paying too much money for the damage that they caused.
Greg Palast is an investigative journalist. He reports for the BBC and The Guardian, and he's author of a number of books, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, Vulture's Picnic, and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Now, Greg, your website is gregpalast.com, which we will link to on santafe.radiocafe.org. Tell us a little bit about what's on your site.
Well, right now, you can get the book Vulture's Picnic, which tells the story of my investigation in Alaska, in the Congo, in the Amazon, in the Arctic. These are all places while I'm hunting down banksters and petroleum pirates. Also, I have the pre-release, before it's going to be commercially released, I have a special edition of my newest film, Vultures and Vote Rustlers, which includes my investigation of British Petroleum, including my being under arrest in the Caspian Sea because while I'm hunting down the evidence against BP. And that you can download or get a signed DVD. I have a not-for-profit foundation, so this is all for supporting investigative reporting and getting the real stuff.
Greg Palast, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
You're very welcome.